Please listen carefully.
And now, live from the attic that smells like a basement in McKinney, Texas, it's the Assuming Positions Podcast, featuring two guys who know better and do it anyway, Kevin and Mikey.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Assuming Positions Podcast. Kevin over here.
And Mikey over here.
And today on the podcast, we're doing a movie review, an assumption, not a reassumption, an assumption.
Yeah, first time, best time.
First time, best time. So in the past, we'll do a thing where we're usually light up the mics and be like, hey, we're going to the movies and we're going to watch this movie. And when we come back, we're going to talk about it immediately.
Yeah.
But then things happened called pandemic. So thanks for sticking with us, everyone. We know everything's weird. So we have to do everything differently now, talking in two different places and all this kind of crazy stuff. But movies are still coming out, but they're coming out to your house now. So
and we've talked about that a little bit on the podcast. That is a cool thing that we're still getting new movies on streaming. You know, we can watch them at home. But as much as I miss the movie theater aspect, it was cool to be like, hey, I saw this movie. You should watch it and we can have a chat about it because that's what we do when we go to the movie theater. I'm with you.
Yes. So being that this is basically a nerd-based podcast, that's the bones of it, even though we've been doing a lot of movie reviews and stuff like that. But down deep, this was built out of a role-playing gaming group.
Yes.
And we still have the bones underneath there. So we like the nerdy stuff. We like the Star Wars and the Marvels and the fantasy and the sci-fi. Yes. And speaking of sci-fi, Netflix released a big tentpole movie directed by and starring George Clooney called The Midnight Sky, which is like a sci-fi, well, it's just a science fiction film, straight science fiction film. So mm-hmm. We're like, hey, this is perfect. Let's do a review of this, which we call an assumption.
Maybe we can check this out again like 8 years from now. I don't know what the time restriction is, but maybe we can come back to it and be like, wow, we were really wrong or really right. Who knows?
I think personally, I think we're going to be really right. I think that the critics and a lot of people are wrong on this. I think this is a one of those things that's going to people are going to be like, oh, that got bad reviews when it came out. That's what I think.
Yep.
I'm stating that right now up front. Spoiler.
Out on Front Street.
Spoilers. And speaking of spoilers, we're probably going to spoil stuff, especially there's a twist ending to this movie. So we're going to go ahead and spoil that when we get to it, because it's kind of, if you're going to talk about this movie, you're going to kind of have to talk about that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like talking about the I See Dead People movie without talking about the twist in there. No, it is.
Wait, Sixth Sense? Bruce Willis was dead the whole time? What are you telling me? Just kidding. I've seen that movie.
Spoilers. Spoilers. Or that, what was the other one that had that the twist the twist that people get really mad if you spoiled it? What was the movie with the
every M. Night Shyamalan movie, but we already said Sixth Sense. What was the one?
What am I thinking of?
I'm thinking of
Fight Club's one of them, but Fight Club was just kind of confusing. I'm thinking of the one with the girl who was a guy in it.
Boys Don't Cry with Hilary Swank?
No, not Boys Don't Cry.
Just One of the Guys? The old 80s movie?
Oh my god, people are yelling at their iPod right now. No one uses an iPod anymore.
I know.
You know, it's like doing a review of The Crying Game, and yeah, I guess.
Oh yeah, that was the classic twist. Absolutely. People were like, what, it's a dude?
Yeah, spoilers. But Siskel and Ebert were able to do it, but they don't talk for 45 minutes about one movie, so and we're not them. They're the OG movie review guys.
Yep.
So Midnight Sky, what's this movie about, Mikey? Just the broad, easy, like little tiny synopsis that's at the bottom of the
the elevator
marquee?
Pitch for this. Yes. Oh yeah, the marquee, the bottom of the poster, something like that.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, this is another one of George Clooney's directorial movies. He's done The Midnight Sky, he's done Monuments Men, he's done Leatherheads, he's done Good Night and Good Luck. So he does have a good track record as a director, but this comes based off a book called Good Morning Midnight by Lily Brooks Dalton. And it's a real, it is a sci-fi movie, but I think at its heart, it's just a real simple story about a scientific explorer, in this case, George Clooney, the main star, whose name is Augustine, is a scientist that's out to find adventure and explore, like I said, but he's looking specifically for a planet that might be Earth. That's something that comes up, you know, in tech articles and all that. Like, they found a new exoplanet. Does it support life? This movie sort of takes that principle and sets up George Clooney as a scientist that's on the hunt for it. Meanwhile, there's a B plot that interacts with it where there is a space crew on a spaceship on a mission to go find one of those planets. And it's those two stories sort of interacting and overlapping and all the hijinks and conflicts that ensue.
Yeah, so George Clooney plays a scientist named Augustine Lofthouse, which is, that's an awesome name.
If he wasn't born to be a scientist, he was probably born to be a poet, because there's only so many things that you can do in life with that kind of name.
Augustine Lofthouse. Yeah, so like Mike said, he's looking for habitable planets. He finds a possible habitable moon of Jupiter.
Yeah.
That's the whole kind of how he got famous and renowned. We find out through flashbacks. This movie uses a lot of flashbacks to give his backstory. But of course, we start off with he's in the Arctic at some base, and there's a whole bunch of people who are evacuating. And we're not told why, but we find out later. This movie is kind of onion peely in that it slowly reveals things, but it never fully reveals anything, which might be some people's frustration with this, but that doesn't bother me because I guess I watch enough. I don't know if I want to call them highbrow movies, but there's...
No, I'm with you. Yeah, it's more of a thinker, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of movies that don't explain stuff and let you fill it in, and I've found that increasingly people more and more aren't liking that type of thing. A lot of people are having problems with the new WandaVision show because that show is very, like, they're not letting you know what's going on.
Okay.
As it's going on.
I got you.
And I found some people have little problems with that. They're like, I don't know what's happening in the show. And you're like, you're not supposed to know what's happening. That's the whole point of watching the show. And a lot of people get upset with that because they want to know what's going on.
For me, I think that's why I tend to go sci-fi in general, because just on principle, I like it when they don't explain things to you. You should have to think about it a little bit. I don't like being force-fed like, here's this and here's the reason for it. And it works out because of this that we've already set up. And here's all this foreshadowing and it all pays off. Like, I get that. That's great. That's good craftsmanship. But this movie tells you nothing and it expects you to sort of connect the dots on your own. And I love being able to participate in the movie. So I'm on board with it.
And I'm also going to take a stance to say that that is literally something that's quote unquote nerdier.
Yeah,
and
I'll
take that stand. I think kind of the normies versus the nerdy, the normies are the ones who need everything explained, because since you said sci-fi does it a lot, that's exactly how Firefly / Serenity is.
Oh,
they
sure.
don't. He doesn't explain how any of like the technology works. He doesn't explain like why is there like a lot of Chinese stuff going on.
Why is there slang?
Yeah, he doesn't explain any of it. It's just the way it is. And it never really gets fully explained, even in like the other materials that he does. And when asked about it, Joss Whedon was just like, I'm not worried about that. He like literally didn't even try and fill it in. He was just like, it's because that's how I like it type thing.
Yeah.
So I really like that approach, because I think one of the nerd Mount Rushmore guys got himself in a lot of trouble, George Lucas, by trying to explain stuff when people asked him, as opposed to just being like, hey man, it just is how it is. But now we got midichlorians, so whatever.
I guess the argument would be that could be kind of lazy writing to make the audience explain it for you. But this movie particularly sets up a strong enough world that you sort of know how to operate in it. Because two of the things we missed in my elevator explanation of this movie is that we start in medias res, like you were saying, but the main conflicts in this movie, for George Clooney personally, he has an undiagnosed disease that we're never told what it is that he needs dialysis for. And then the world is being overtaken by radiation because of, quote unquote, the event. But they, like, this is a 2.5-hour movie. They never say what that event is. They show you Earth. They say that radiation's coming. But what it is, I still don't know, having seen this movie.
No. But the thing is, you know what? Technically, that's more realistic, because when we talk about the pandemic to each other, we just mentioned it earlier on the podcast. Do we stop and explain to all the listeners that about a year ago in Wuhan, China, you know, or what, you know, is no, we don't explain it. Just they know what the event is. They just call it. They know what that's called. Just like we call this the pandemic, or some people call it COVID.
Yep.
You know, they just say the event and everyone knows what that means. We do get to see like kind of a just. To give you context, there's people evacuating from this Arctic base, and he's going to stay behind. And it's kind of alluded to that he's like, hey, I have a critical illness anyway, so I'm going to stay behind and I'm going to try and see what I can do from here. And again, he doesn't sit there and explain what any of that stuff means.
Nope.
He's just talking to one of his coworkers saying like, And they're like, are you sure you're not going to come? And he's like, I made my decision. And everyone leaves. So he goes back to this lonely, big Arctic base by himself. And you get to see him looking at the various computer screens to see what's going on. And one thing he does quite often is he checks the growing, like, radiation or moving, rolling darkness, evil levels that are going around the Earth.
The spreading red zones, yes.
Yeah, and we see that the red zones are basically, they haven't got to the Arctic yet, but all around major areas, cities, and there's red zones everywhere over land. I noticed it wasn't as red over the ocean, which was interesting. So who knows exactly what happened, whether it was nuclear war or what.
Yeah, nuclear war, greenhouse gases, climate change stuff. It could be whatever your fear is. You can just apply it here and it will work.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's not relevant. All we know is that Earth is in trouble. People are evacuating. And come to find out that he's trying to contact any spaceships that are out there to tell them not to come back.
Yeah, because there's a shot. They show a computer screen. There's like maybe 16 active missions, but there's like, he goes through the checklist and find out that there's only like one left. So he's trying to find that one to get in contact with him to let him know, hey, Earth may not be the home base that you think it is.
Exactly. Because whatever their mission control was, if it was in Houston or whatever, it's gone.
Absolutely.
So that's what he's doing. And we find out that, he has some kind of critical, he's taking pills and then washing them down with like whiskey, which isn't the best thing to do.
Good old Tennessee whiskey,
and he's got some kind of cool machine which like basically cleans his blood. It's basically like dialysis, I guess, but it's like a backpack. It's like high tech because this is a sci-fi thing.
Yeah, and it has the little convenient hookups that just attach to his arm and he can just lay there. Like,
yeah,
all right, I guess that worked.
So
but here's where I got to give props to George Clooney the actor, because I think given to a more unknown person or maybe a less experienced person, this movie would suffer a little bit more. George Clooney is captivating just being himself, whether he's hooked up to a dialysis machine or eating peas or cereal like in some abandoned Arctic base, you know. I'd say I just have to point out that I am a huge Clooney fan, and I was just happy to watch him do his mundane research stuff and be like, oh, I believe it. There's so much gravitas, but that's just me, I guess.
No, this movie has a lot of silence and him just kind of walking around. It's very much like Tom Hanks in Castaway.
Oh, absolutely. That's
same kind of thing. And it takes that kind of actor. I would say George Clooney, Tom Hanks, that's kind of a level of actor there.
Yeah.
I'd put Hanks up above Clooney myself. But still, there is a lot of silence and a lot of just him kind of moping around. And he's not talking. And they're just using his actions to build the story. You really have to pay attention, which might be why a lot of people have problems with this movie, because they just don't have to. I don't know. I think this movie is not like a throwing popcorn in your mouth type of movie.
No.
You have to pay attention to what's going on and be really involved in it. And it sucked me in.
I get it. You can tell me how much you relate to this or not. There's two points, though. One, I think the trailer is another example of a trailer not representing the movie correctly. Mm. I didn't watch the trailer until after I watched the movie.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I only went back while I was doing my research to be like, how is this like pitched, you know? And the trailer that you see is not the movie that you get. So I think that may be a disconnect for some people.
Mm.
But also, like I mentioned at the start, this is based off a book first. And when you're dealing with those sort of book-based properties, there is a little bit more of the like the human element, the internal narrative aspect, you know, where you get those silences and people contemplating decisions. And it's not necessarily like, oh, let's look at these cool spaceships and let's go to these cool planets. It's more like, you're a human in this extraordinary universal story. How do you respond? So maybe that's just book nature. I don't know if that justifies it completely, but I went in with that mindset. And so I had a better time with the silence, the cinematography. Oh, it's great. There's so many wide shots, so many slow shots. So I don't know if you felt that way or what, but that's what did it for me.
No, I thought it looked great. I thought it was, I wondered where that facility was, where they shot that, what was going on, if they're using all the technical stuff. I was interested in that because I thought that base was so cool. The loneliness really came across and everything. That it was, I thought that was great.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then we get the added twist, the extra conflict in this movie is that while George Clooney is going about monitoring space missions and doing his dialysis and making sure the Arctic base is still up in the pole safe from the radiation, he notices extra food being laid out or the kitchen catching on fire. And he's like, am I taking too many pills? Did I have an extra shot of whiskey? But you come to find out that it's a little girl at the base with him.
Yes, there's a little girl who is left behind.
Left behind. And again, this is something they don't really explain. They make one line reference to this while they're evacuating. Like, there's a lady looking for her daughter. She's like, has anybody seen Anna? And somebody's like, oh, she went on another ship. She's already gone. Turns out, maybe this is the girl that's left behind. You know, that's all the explanation that you get.
Yeah, and he doesn't know because this girl won't speak.
Oh, it's so great. I was giving props to George Clooney, but I got to give props to the young girl, Kaylin Springall. For a role where she says two lines throughout the entire movie, she's incredibly captivating and adorable. Like,
yes,
those eyes.
She's all of like 7 years old or something like that.
That's it. Yeah. Oh, it's so captivating. It immediately puts you in the role of Clooney, who, of course, has to be the curmudgeon-y, grumpy protagonist. He's like, I'm the wrong person. I can't help you. I plan to stay at this Arctic base to die, but now you're giving me a reason to live. Insert humanity. That's the whole point, you know? It's like, George Clooney, you got to do one more mission. Let's go.
Yeah, and of course, he tries to contact the people, but they couldn't get any signal through. The people who left, they're long gone or destroyed. Or later we come to find out that it's mentioned, you have to really pay attention. It's mentioned that there's like underground bunkers or something that a lot of these people are evacuating to. So
yeah,
there is a place for people to be and perhaps live. So see, it's kind of funny because I like it as a nerd trying to think of, man, what was this event? It doesn't frustrate me that I don't know what this event was. It makes sparks my imagination.
Oh, I'm with you. Yeah.
And it makes me think that it seems like if they have a place to go, then those places were built, which means they knew that this was going to happen or something like that, which is crazy cool to me to think. And you start thinking about like, man, do you have that one of those cool things where it's like, can you pay to get in there? Do they decide? How do they decide?
Yeah.
Who gets in there? Is it just the elites? What's going on? It's one of those, it sparks my imagination. It makes me world build on my own.
Oh, that's the best. And it's interesting because they're doing something new, because we've already had the movies like Day After Tomorrow or like all those disaster movies where they have those bunkers. So you know how that situation plays out if you've seen those movies. So now you can just imagine like what caused them to set them up in the first place. Why aren't they good? Why are we focused on this instead? I'm with you. It's great.
Yeah, it's almost like a sequel, this movie.
Yeah,
sequel
absolutely. Something. Yeah, yeah.
Or it's kind of, that's kind of thing. This is almost like an episode in like a show where like all this stuff has happened before. Like there was episodes before about the ship going off on its mission and you know.
Yep. But finally, meanwhile, at the Arctic base at the other side of the Hall of Justice, George Clooney is trying to save one spaceship.
Yeah.
No,
and
but
one little girl.
Oh, and a little girl, yeah. No, but there's so many tones of like Sunshine or Arrival or Interstellar. It's that kind of sci-fi movie and I'm all on board. But
right.
I do want to bring up this point. Once we meet the girl, we do get the good use of flashbacks in this movie, which I think you have a comment on as far as George Clooney goes. But as far as because we started this movie in medias res and sort of like you just dive in and don't really get into it, I think the use of flashbacks was really cool to sort of fill in the gaps for things that they did want to say.
Yeah, they use flashbacks to give you the background of Augustine Lofthaus, the character. As a scientist, they talk about him discovering the planet that this Aether mission that he finds. Is it Aether or Ether? Aether? Ether.
I think Aether. Both are correct. I say Aether. I think they say Ether in the movie, but that A-E together, that's anybody's guess.
Yeah. I say Aether because it looks like Aether, but they might have said Aether in the movie. So the Aether mission is based on all his research. So it's kind of like, here's the Quinky Dink.
Yes.
The only ship that he can find is the one that was sent out because of all his research that he did. But basically, the backstory is about him and a relationship he has with Gene Sullivan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically a classic story of he cares about his work so much that he lets his relationships fall to the side.
Yeah. His wife is ignored and wants to start a life, but her husband is so buried in his work, and how can they ever live together? It's really heavy for being short scenes.
It is. Now, they do something awesome in here, and this is the comment Mikey was talking about. They do the old school thing. They didn't sit there and try and de-age George Clooney to play the young George Clooney. They got an actor who looked very similar to how George Clooney looked when he was younger.
Yeah, this is what we were talking about on The Mandalorian with Luke Skywalker. Right. Yeah, yeah.
And then, who's that actor? What's his name?
The actor that plays young Augustine is Ethan Peck.
So, this is brilliant because we all know what... I think the reason why they do this de-aging stuff is because they're like, well, people know what this person used to look like, so they're not going to buy it. Even though, for however many years of cinema... they always would just get some actor who looked like the younger version of the person and be like, this is them now, deal with it.
Yeah, they're close enough. You can buy it.
And everyone accepted it. But what they did in this movie is that the thing about George Clooney is more than what he looks like, he has a certain mannerisms and a certain way of acting.
Mm-hmm.
And this actor was doing kind of a George Clooney impression in a lot of ways.
Yep.
He acted like young George Clooney, so that made him even look more like young George Clooney. And his voice sounded like George Clooney. I don't know if they ADR'd it or if he just was doing a really good George Clooney impression. But I was like, oh my gosh, this is how you do. This is how you do it.
This is how you do it. I love it.
Because that's what I wanted from The Mandalorian.
Yes.
Get Sebastian Stan in there.
Absolutely.
And if you're worried about him not sounding like Mark Hamill back in the 80s, ADR that. I know that they can change people's pitch singers all the time. They can make bad singers sound good.
Absolutely, yeah.
I know that. Use your technology and something that will fool us better than the weird things that they're doing with the CGI stuff. Just have him sit there, and if he speaks and it sounds like Mark Hamill and he looks enough like Mark Hamill, then there you go.
Oh, perfect. No, I'm with you.
Or use Mark Hamill's voice and do whatever that pitch down that you do to make him sound younger. And then you can credit it. Can at the end of the thing, it will say Luke Skywalker played by Sebastian Stan and Mark Hamill.
Yeah, voiced by Mark Hamill. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, come on, man.
You had I'm with you. I have the same type of groan. But you had mentioned the ADR versus like actor doing an impression and even looking for it or trying to hear it or sense it. I couldn't pick it out, which means it worked perfectly. Like it was unnoticeable. It fit. I bought into it. So whatever way they did it right because I didn't notice it. You know, it didn't take me out of it.
Right. I bought into it so much that I guess I did notice it, but it was a good notice. It was a, like, wow, he seems like a young George Clooney. And it had me looking and seeing like, did they CGI this guy?
Oh, maybe.
And then I'm like, no, no, this is, and then I went and like looked him up and saw the actor in his face. No, that was him. That wasn't George Clooney youngified. So, man, this is, I think we've gone down a road like when they did Lord of the Rings, where he went ahead and used the old school techniques. Where he put the hobbits closer to the screen or further away, and they built that crazy wagon where, you know, Gandalf sitting way in the back, but so everything looks, you know what I mean?
Get that forced perspective, yeah.
Yeah, they're using, that's what it is, forced perspective. Thank you. They're using forced perspective, which is an old school technique.
Yeah,
and
practical.
They're trying to get away from, and even with The Mandalorian, how they're doing the thing where they do that volume thing where everything is around them so the actors can see what's going on instead of being a green screen anymore.
Yeah.
I think that they're losing the sometimes just because you can do it doesn't mean you should do it. The product doesn't end up always being better. And I think that the old school techniques lasted for so long for a reason. So, you know, use your awesome casting directors and have them scour through all these wonderful up-and-coming actors and find the new George Clooney.
Yes.
And put him in here, and that's what they did. So props to that.
No,
That gives this movie an extra slice just for that.
I love it. And I'm with you because as much as I'm a early adopter, I love my gadgets, I love all that nerdy stuff, Hollywood craft and cinema sort of technique has been around since, like, the 20s. So why not take advantage of that? Like, you're standing on the shoulders of giants, like Citizen Kane type stuff. I mean, they didn't have computers at all, and they still made wonderful movies. So tap into that way more than just being like, oh, this is cool. We can make somebody younger. It's like, no, you still got a few more years to work that out.
Yeah. That being said, is there anything else with this part of the moon base before we go Arctic base before we head up to space?
There isn't. That my tangent was going to be, since we're talking about technology, I'd like to get into the technology of the movie, and we'll shift over to the Aether spaceship, which has a weird design. It kind of matches George Clooney's gun design in this movie. There is a technology that exists in this world that's a little bit different than what we've seen so far. Do you have any thoughts, comments?
I thought the spaceship was really cool looking.
Same.
I love when scientists make things that are built on the bones of the actual spacecraft we have.
Oh, nowadays. Absolutely.
That's what we're saying we liked about the black hole when we did our black hole review, is that the spaceships in there look like spaceships.
Yeah. It looks like something NASA would have developed given a long enough timeline. And this sort of fits that same wheelhouse. I'm with you.
I thought it was cool. So who's up on the spaceship? This is where the majority of the cast is up on the spaceship. And there's some heavy hitters up there. We got
Felicity Jones as Sully. We've got David Ayulowo as Adewale. We've got Damian Bashir as Sanchez. And we've got Tiffany Boone as Maya.
And Kyle Chandler.
Oh, Kyle Chandler. How could I forget him as Mitchell?
Yes.
The eternal pilot. I keep seeing him as his role from King Kong. And like, oh, he's one of those faces. It's like, oh, it's that guy.
I love that guy, though. He's one of those that guys that you love. I don't know. There's certain character. He's a character actor now at this point.
Yes.
Good for him, because he's a good looking guy and could have fallen into the leading actor that never did anything again trap. But he managed to carve out a character actor plays for himself, which is awesome, because I like seeing him in things. There's these different character actors throughout our life where when you see him and stuff, you're like, oh, he's in it. I'm glad.
Yeah. For me, that's Sam Rockwell, but Kyle Chandler absolutely fits in there. Here's my hot take. Kyle Chandler should be Nathan Drake over Nathan Fillion. I don't know if you have any comments on that, but I'm putting my hot take out there right now.
Well, yeah, but neither of them get to do it.
Nope, it's Tom Holland.
Yeah.
But Kyle Chandler has that old school Hollywood, like, he could have been the Rocketeer kind of, you buy him the dashing pilot. Yeah, I'm with you.
For sure, for sure. So they're coming back from this mission where they did indeed find out that this moon around Jupiter is habitable for peoples.
Yeah, K23, the moon of Jupiter. It's apparently heating itself from the outside and has all the Goldilocks properties of Earth, too.
Yeah, and an awesome view of Jupiter.
And I guess this is another hot take, or however you want to label it, but there's a scene right when we find out that they're around K2 and this whole mission is going on where Sully, Felicity Jones, has a nightmare that she's getting left behind on the planet, and they never address that again. That was such an unnecessary scene. That's my only comment. Like, why was that scene in there? I don't know.
I think it was there to show you what the planet looked like, because they'd left it already.
But why make it a nightmare? It was so weird. Like, it's like, here's the planet. She's having fun. She's getting samples. They're doing what they should. But, oh, no, she's scared and then wakes up on the ship. I don't know.
Well, but later on, she says to, I don't know if that was her husband or just partner.
Ade, the captain of the ship. Yep.
She later on says to him, I had a dream that you left me behind and I'm mad at you now.
Oh, so it strengthens the relationship of the crew.
It's the relationship thing. And it was perfect to me as a married man being like, oh, yeah.
I thought about it, but you're still here. No. that does make more sense to have it be a crew building. Like, she has fears, but she's part of this crew that all gets each other. It's I'm with you. Okay.
That was it. So what'd you think about we like the ship. What'd you think about the crew and everything? The one thing that I wished is that, and no offense to Spanish people or anything, but that one guy was like a Spanish astronaut, which is fine.
Yeah.
But I wanted him to, at first I thought he was Russian, and I wanted to be Russian because where's the nod to the cosmonauts, man?
They were part of the original space race. I'm with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
He could have easily been a Russian, but I think this is progressive future. So we're now more in expanse territory where we have a Sanchez, you know? I mean,
I guess. I don't know. I just like having the, I don't know. I just like having, he could have easily been, that character could have easily been a Russian dude. And if you wanted someone who was Hispanic or whatever, then you could have picked any one of the other characters. It's fine. Or make the pilot. Just, I wanted a Russian. I don't know why. I guess because I thought he was Russian at first. And then it turned out like they're like Sanchez. And I'm like, oh, well, that's not a Russian guy.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. This is only based off a scene that happens later, and I don't know if this is a stereotype or whatever, but his character arc is resolved with a family issue in the third act, And I guess that would fit more in the long lines with like Spanish Mexican tradition than it would with Russian tradition. I don't know. Like proper burial, all that stuff.
Well, I know.
That's how I would justify it. But absolutely, it should have been a cosmonaut. I mean, they've been in the game as long as we have. Why not?
Yeah, I know. Oh, whatever.
But we do get the Aether crew. They are headed back from K-23. They are headed back to the Earth that they do not know about. But of course, because it's a long-term mission on a spaceship, something has to go wrong. There has to be meteors. There has to be uncharted space. We don't know everything. They're not going to tell us everything. So something's going to go wrong because obviously something has to go wrong.
Yes. So what goes wrong is they find out that they have gone off course somehow.
Yep.
And they have to make a course correction to get back to Earth. So the only way you can correct course is going by through an uncharted lane, which they have an argument about. But and of course, they end up doing it. And that uncharted lane puts them through a meteor field.
Yes.
Which takes out their comms and causes all kinds of problems. And there's your conflict right there. So,
but also causes one of my favorite scenes in a sci-fi movie, the spacewalk. As calm and as peaceful as it is, oh, we're going to go out and floating in space and we're going to fix everything. Every time a scene like that happens, my whole body just clenches because I'm like, this is where things go wrong.
And this is where it went wrong that I told you to watch this and think of Black Hole.
Okay, so like you did mention that in our Black Hole review, there is a scene that happens and I think I missed it. So lay it on me. What were you trying to have me pick up on?
When they're doing the spacewalk and they went in through another band of meteors while they were out there. That was just like how the meteor shower was hitting the ship in the black hole and they're trying to run around and there's meteors flying through it.
Oh, it took out everything. Absolutely. Yeah.
So yeah, it's just the same. I don't know. It was just ship and meteor shower and people scared about it. That's all.
Only because I was looking at it, I was kind of expecting the Indiana Jones giant ball of lava meteor spaceship. Okay. No, but that never happened. So I was like, wait, what? But yes, sorry. Meteor shatter. No, you're good.
It was just meteor shatter. I was trying not to spoil it for you, so I couldn't explain.
My expectations got ahead of me. That's fine. It happened.
What'd you think of the long-term mission hologram hangout with your family holodeck thing?
Like,
that was on the ship.
They never explain it. This is one of those things that's just like, this exists on the ship, and I bought into it 100%, especially because they made really cool technology in that, like, the furniture is modular. Like, the wall would come out to fit the hologram scene.
Yeah.
That's, like, that's smart computer. That's excellent programming. I know the actual, like, visual of the hologram looks weird because it kind of has that, like, VHS sort of digital artifact look to it, but I justified it in my brain. The reason it looks like that is because if you're in it, you can see it from a 360 view, you know? So wherever you're looking, the hologram fits it. And I'm like, oh, that's... And if you're on a long-term space mission, you're going to get lonely, you're going to miss home and all that. And that's the technology they came up to keep them sane. Oh, it's so touching and heartwarming. I love it.
I also like, too, that it wasn't too high-tech in the fact that you couldn't interact with anybody because it was literally just kind of, it was almost like a memory program.
Yeah,
where you could be in your memory.
The old vacation slideshow. Yeah. Here's where we went to the Great Pyrenees and here's where we went to the Grand Canyon. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty cool. Yeah. I thought it was neat too.
And it fits in because like the rest of the spaceship, they have their greenhouses. They have their little pendulum rotation, like gravitational thing. They have their glass shield. So it just fits in with like, oh, this is NASA in 2049. This is NASA years from now. So why not have holographic technology that's specifically designed to make sure your crew doesn't go crazy or get really lonely?
Yeah.
But we get the spacewalk. We do get the there's two scenes that I have to talk about the spacewalk. Yes, my whole body was clenched because I knew something was going wrong, which spoiler alert, it does, because Maya, it's kind of tropey, but Maya, the first time she's ever going out on a spacewalk is also the last time she ever goes out on a spacewalk. But in between those two events, we do get Sanchez, our Spanish scientist, playing Sweet Caroline over the speakers. I love a good musical interlude out in space, and everybody's singing along. It's a good time, and they're setting it up for a catastrophe to happen. So great scene. I'm sad that somebody died, but it was a nice balance of lighthearted versus, oh, crap, something's going wrong.
Well, the best part about it, too, is that Maya was young, and they had her be like, I don't know what this song is.
Oh, yeah.
Which made sense, because that song is like how old now? 90, 80, 90 years old by that point?
Oh, absolutely. Neil Diamond, he's long forgotten at this point.
Yeah, so, and she's like, I never heard this song before, which I was like, that's brilliant. That's whoever wrote that into the screenplay, that's so brilliant that she's like, and then some of the other people too, like, kind of knew the words, but not really, which so made sense to me. I was like, oh, this makes sense that some people know it really well, and some people were like, yeah, I think I've heard this. It has that one part in it. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I liked it too. I don't think it was too cheesy or anything.
But that's the power of Neil Diamond. Everybody's going to eventually start bobbing their head to that song and doing the do, 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 sweet Caroline. Yeah. Bah, bah,
bah. Also, we kind of skipped the fact that, and this is just kind of a point for later, I guess, but we find out that Felicity Jones is with child because she and the Commander Ade are apparently a couple. They never... Again, they don't explain. They don't explain if they were married or if they started hooking up on the mission or what, but it doesn't matter. All you know is that she's with child and he's the dad and they're very happy about it and there's nothing scandalous. No one's acting like it's a breach of protocol or anything. So
yeah, no,
it makes you think that maybe they were together before they went or whatever.
It makes you think that it's all kosher, and this may be a little book writing influencing the movie writing, but the fact that the whole crew, like, it's a small bit, but it's an endearing bit. The whole crew is, like, suggesting names for the child, which sets up that they're a family, you know?
Yeah.
They're a unit, and while, yes, this lady is having a child with this man, they're all a part of it, and they all support it, and they want to name the child Hyacinth? Come on, Kyle Chandler, you can think of a better name than that.
Yeah, and of course, we don't want to skip over the moment where, like, during the spacewalk, they go through another meteor shower. Bad things happen. Maya gets hurt really bad. We have the crazy blood pooling up in low zero gravity, I guess, actually zero gravity.
Yep.
In her helmet thing, like, oh, that's not good.
It was such a slow burn. Oh, it had me on the edge of my seat because, like, she's starting to go back. You think everything's right, and then she sees, like, one drop of blood, and you're like, uh-oh, one drop of blood. That's not good. And she gets a little bit farther, and you're like, oh, three drops of blood. And then she gets in the airlock, and she's like, there's too much blood. And you're like, that is too much blood. What's happening?
Yeah, it was rough, man.
But my nitpick is, like, if Sanchez is the med, like, he's there with the medical kit, and they have to go through all their decompression and everything, but the end result of their medical knowledge is that they just apply pressure to the wound. That's all you're going to do. It seems like they could have done more, but you gotta have that, I guess, the downturn in the narrative.
Yeah. Now, when we go back to Earth, Clooney realizes that his antenna isn't powerful enough to get through to the aether properly.
Yes.
So he needs to have a more powerful antenna, and he realizes that there's a base a little further north that does have a more powerful antenna because it's like some, it's more of a, they never explain what the original base was, some big base.
Yep.
And you're not really sure what it was for, but it was for some research. But I guess the one further north is just a straight astronomical observatory or something like that.
Yeah. It's a weather station that happens to be a little bit higher.
Weather station. That's right.
And it happens to be a little bit higher in the mountains, but they just say, hey, this is Lake Hazen. They have a better satellite. We got to go here. That's all we get.
So he suits up himself and the little girl who doesn't talk, and they head off to go across the Arctic desert just on a snowmobile. But what you going to do?
Hey, that's the resources you have available to you. I did read that they actually filmed a bunch of those scenes on location in Iceland. So it is a little bit CGI, but it is a little bit practical. So I wasn't sure because the camera effects are cool, but some of it seems like, did they just put a whole bunch of snow in a studio set? But apparently they were on location for some of it. So props to them.
That's cool. And then we have this kind of cool... We had the space survival thing, and we have this parallel Arctic survival thing, which is kind of like another version of space.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're all alone. It's an untenable environment. I'm with you.
Yeah. So they head off, and he's having to deal with wolves, and we get the crazy thing where he finds that downed aircraft.
Oh, yeah.
And that freaking dude's face with his blood frozen coming out of his empty head. Ugh.
But were they setting up? Because in that plane, they show like fancy artworks and old paintings. Was it just like a billionaire trying to like find last resort and he's a bad guy anyway? What was your, did you get an impression from that?
I didn't get any impression. All I know is that, you know, he didn't want the little girl to see that the gore. And then he finds someone who's still alive in the ship. And that's where we get to see his, that cool rifle that he had with the cool 3D printed stock or whatever. That was so cool looking. It looked like it was so sci-fi Western. It was something from Firefly.
Oh, exactly. And it ties in with the design of the Aether ship. They, both of them have that 3D sort of lightweight but like membrane structure to be like supportive yet real light. I don't know. It's real futuristic and cool.
It was really cool looking. But yeah, he has the guy basically is like, hey man, take me out.
Please help me. I'm whispering. You need to end my misery. And then, of course, the little girl walks in right when he's about to end his misery. And I guess that's the human conflict of it. But George Clooney is always the practical. He's the stay behind and do his job regardless of the fact that he needs dialysis. So he takes out rich plain guy and they continue on their way to their ultimate goal.
Yep. And so at one point they have to stop and they find a whole bunch of containers from like a container ship, I guess. No, it's actually, they're not from a container ship. It's a base of some sort because there was like stuff in there.
Yeah, it looks like temporary shelters that are designed to hold up in the Arctic, but they were like airdropped or something. Like,
yeah,
here's your temporary bases while you get the weather station set up so, you know, you don't die in the cold. But it's essentially just, like you're saying, shipping containers that are repurposed to have computers and beds and all that stuff.
Right. And I can't remember if it was before or after. It doesn't really matter in the narrative. But there is a point during this trip before they get to, spoiler alert, before they get to the base. but there's a point where you get your first idea that something's amiss with this little girl that's with him.
Yes.
And they start getting surrounded by wolves. Wolves are like circling around him. And he's shooting his gun and scare him off. And at one point they do a wide shot. And you see him, he loses the track of where the girl is because it's in a blizzard and the snow's going and stuff. He loses track of her.
Yep.
And they do a wide shot and he's just alone by himself.
By himself.
And you're thinking, what the heck's going on? And then he kind of comes to like half frozen to death. And there she is standing there looking at him. And the thing that was like, what's going on? You're like, how come she isn't half frozen to death? But okay.
And especially because, like, when he first opens his eyes, he sees his old girlfriend from the flashbacks. He sees Jean Sullivan, and then it sort of, like, morphs into the little girl. So they're like,
"Yeah,
what's going on? Is he hallucinating, or, like, is there more to this?"
Was that before or after he fell into the water and lost his stuff? That was after, right?
No, the wolves come first, they get lost, and then they stop for shelter because they have been through so much trials and tribulations and are cold. And so they stop the shelter, and it's the first time the girl talks because, you know, he's talking about his past life and all that stuff. But they're in the shelter, and things go wrong. They think it's a safe place to stop, but in the middle of the night, it starts to sink into the frozen Arctic waters because apparently they were on a lake. Like, what?
Is that where... When she talks, is that where he finds out what her name is?
He finds out what her name is in the original base when she's drawing the iris and he calls it an iris and she looks at him. He's like, oh, is your name Iris?
That's right.
When he's talking in the temporary shelter on their way to Lake Hazen, he's reminiscing about Jean Sullivan. And I don't know if he ever mentions the daughter he never met, but eventually he says, so that's my story. And she turns to him and goes, did you ever love her? You know?
Yeah, and then the thing crashes into the ice right after she says that. He never gets the answer.
Never. It's a like, wake up, yeah.
It's snap cut to disaster. And he loses his dialysis thing in the water and is like under the water and then comes back up and the little girl's kind of cleaning him up and stuff. And everyone wondered why he didn't freeze to death, but I have an explanation for that later.
I will be on team side of this was a little bit beyond my suspension of disbelief. He went into Arctic waters probably about 20 feet down, you know, without a coat. Like they already show his beard frozen and they've already showed the trials and tribulations, like I said. But I love George Clooney, but I don't think even George Clooney could have survived those circumstances.
Yeah. And I don't think he did survive those circumstances. Okay. Really. But I'll tell you later, because that's going to go into the final spoiler part, which we're pretty much at now. So yeah. Everybody, if you haven't seen this movie, like, hey, man, stop and go watch it and then come back, because we're about to spoiler it, because they get to the base, mm-hmm. which we already said earlier. Lake Hazen, is that what it is?
Lake Hazen, yep.
And he has the more powerful antenna, and the conflict is that the Aether, their communications were knocked out while he was unable to contact them.
Yep.
And they've been trying to contact Earth, but they haven't been to get everything because everybody's hiding or dead. And finally, he's able to get through to them. And it's Sully, Felicity Jones's character, who is actually the communications officer, mm-hmm. I guess. So she's the one who runs all the communications. So finally, they get through and contact each other. And this is where the movie goes all wibbly wobbly. But I thought it was really cool. And what do you think about what happens here, Mikey?
So if we go real deep into it, they do get in contact with each other and they're telling each other their names. Eventually, George Clooney comes up with a plan that they have to go back to K-23 because Earth is inhabitable. So they translate all that information. But we're talking about the fact that George Clooney learns that Sully, Felicity Jones, is actually Iris Sullivan, the little girl that he's been bringing along with him on his journey. It was mind blowing. I kind of saw it coming, but my expectations got away with me again. I was hoping, maybe because we had just watched Black Hole, I was kind of hoping for like a time loop, like time is relative and his daughter is actually there to help him in real life somehow through some weird time primordial stuff. But it turns out that the Iris he imagined was actually just a hallucination of the daughter he never met, but was his inspiration to make sure that the daughter he is protecting on the space mission stays alive.
So this is the way I saw it. On some level, or he knew he had a daughter that he didn't meet.
Yes.
And I really think that now it's not 100% acted that way, because when he finds out who she is, when they're talking to each other over the comms, it seems like he's making the realization.
Oh, absolutely. That
his daughter's the one on the ship. But I think he's making the realization that that girl with him is a hallucination, because I think the fact that he was so invested in trying to save this particular ship is because he knew his daughter was on it.
And the hallucination is sort of the manifestation of him to try and making right, making amends, like,
yes,
of the daughter he never met. Yeah, I'm with you.
Yes. And I think he's hallucinating her because he's taking whatever weird drugs these are. He's dying of whatever thing that needs his blood, and he's drowning it with whiskey.
Yes.
And I think that's totally messed his brain up, and he's hallucinating. And I think that's why I don't think he actually fell into that water. I don't think it actually broke like that.
Okay.
I don't even know if he was ever in that thing in the first place. I don't even know if any of that really happened. What I think happened is that he went from that one place to the other, and he did have to deal with wolves, because mm-hmm. we saw that, and they showed how there was no girl there. That was your first hint.
Oh, true. Yep.
And I think that he did fall over half frozen, and then when he opened his eyes, that was the motivation for him to keep going. And his brain had to explain why I don't have my stuff anymore. I think it's just part of the, I don't know. I think the dunking into the cold frozen water and losing your is some kind of metaphor for something. And I'm not smart enough to know what that metaphor is, but I think that was more of a metaphor for them. I think he might've hallucinated that too. Anything that should have killed him. I think he very well could have hallucinated it.
And
you know what I mean?
And you're helping justify the scene I had a problem with earlier. Felicity Jones gets left behind on the planet, and we realize that's a nightmare, you know? So maybe this is George Clooney having a nightmare, and it's just it's fears and anxieties manifested. Like, they set the groundwork for it with the Felicity Jones scene, so it makes sense that it would happen to George Clooney, especially because they're doing smart writing with, throughout the whole movie, we're wondering why this little girl doesn't talk. But knowing that she's a hallucination, he's never heard her voice, so he doesn't know what she sounds like. So that all fits. I mean, that's just smart right there.
The fact that he's hallucinating the little girl makes him an unreliable narrator. So anything that happened to him throughout this whole movie, we can't trust. The only things we can trust is when he's communicating with the ship.
When he's off those pills and whiskey. Kind of.
Right. Well, no, we can only trust him communicating with the ship because they're the other characters are there communicating back with him. So
yes,
we know that's not a hallucination and that's happening. So I think that when the emotion that he's feeling when he's talking to her isn't realizing that that's his daughter on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's him realizing that that little girl is a hallucination. And he's like, I've really lost it now. And but I saved her and mission complete. And they're going to turn around and go back. And that's his, it's all wrapped up.
That is the weird third act resolution. So George Clooney does get in contact with Ether to let him know that Earth is basically non-viable anymore. And so the crew of the ship is faced with the conflict of, do we go back home or do we slingshot around the Earth and head back to K-23 to start life all over again, which I have a problem with. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, the problem I have with is that they got rid of everyone who could help start life again.
Yep, Chandler and Sanchez, yeah.
Yeah, because Kyle Chandler wanted to be with his family, and he heard that some people were put in bunkers, so he wanted to see if he could make it down there to whatever bunker. And Sanchez wanted to bury Maya's body on Earth for some reason and decided to go with him.
That's that Spanish traditionalism I was talking about.
Yeah.
You got to honor the dead.
So they leave to land back on Earth. So all you have traveling back are a man and a woman who's having a child, and then there's no anybody else.
So you
unless the movie doesn't tell you.
Yes.
So there are other space missions out there. We don't know what happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
There's no saying that he just couldn't contact them for some reason or whatever.
Yeah, they were inactive or out of range, yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe there are other people out there. Maybe there were shuttle ships launched, like evacuation ships launched.
Oh, there you go.
That are out there. I mean, it's not explained. But yes, if you're going on the premise that those are the only three people left in the humans left in Earth, then I don't know. You're dealing with Adam and Eve type stuff and trying to explain what happens with just two peoples. But
my nerd brain got in the way, and there's really no feasible way that two people can restart an entire society. You need at least like four or six just to get some variation in there. Otherwise, you're just making a new England. Like, you have a new monarchy. Yeah. And
inbreeding's not the best is what we're saying.
Especially on a new planet. I mean, who knows what's going to go wrong? I'm glad you're with me on that. There is one aspect that I saw on the internet going back after I watched it, in that, so George Clooney is the other side of the story, and we get one last shot of him going out to stand in the Arctic wilderness after he's contacted Aether and they've made the decision to go back to K-23. Apparently the internet decided that he walked outside to die. That's why you don't see the daughter anymore. Like, he's all resolved. And apparently the interpretation for some people was that he did his mission, so now he's just going to walk outside and end his life. And I'm like, what? I don't know. I don't believe it.
Well, he is going to die. He doesn't have his dialysis thing anymore. And, you know, so
he survived a long time without it, though. I guess that's narrative armor anyway.
Yeah. I mean, who knows how often he needed it. We don't even know what he had. So.
Oh, true. True, true.
But it was terminal anyway, so. But yeah, I guess, I mean, it didn't bother me. I think he knew he was terminal anyway, so.
That fits with the character. That's what they set up in the first act, so I guess that makes sense, but.
Yeah. The interesting thing is that this movie got, like, really mixed reviews. It seems like it's, you either love it or you hate it. It seems like it's 50% on most of the reliable aggregators.
Okay.
And the 50% literally comes from, it seems like people like give it one or give it 10. It's really interesting. It's very divisive. But I'm telling you right now is that I really liked it a lot. And I like I said earlier, I think this might be one of those things that people later are going to realize how good this is. Because I think all these things that we have problems with can be explained away. All the things I've seen people have problems with can be explained, like falling into the water, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming from an unreliable narrator, so we don't even really know if that happened.
True.
At all, because the girl he was talking to before it happened doesn't even exist. So all those colored drawings and stuff that were happening don't exist. There was tons of stuff we were seeing that it doesn't exist. And then also, too, we don't know what else is going on in the world. We don't know if there are... They kind of alluded to it in the movie
mm-hmm.
that the fact that he was looking for habitable planets was because they knew whatever this event was going to happen, which would also mean why they had bunkers ready and all these kind of things. So
yeah,
it's possible that they had a few escape ships. I mean, guys, like, think about the Bezoses of our world, the Elon Musks. They're already building their own spaceships.
And bunkers, so, for sure, yeah.
I mean, 50 years from now, or what is it, 30 years from now is this? What? However long this movie 20, is set.
2049, so about 30
okay,
years.
Okay, yeah. So 30 years from now, Elon Musk is, he's still going to be around. He's going to be an old guy, but you think he's not going to be like, I'm out of here. Fire up one of my spaceships.
No, I'm with you. Yeah, yeah.
So we don't all know exactly what's going on. I think the whole thing is that, and this goes to my earlier point, I think he knew his daughter was on this mission, and that was his single solitary focus. I don't think he cared about any of those other missions, really.
Nope, yep.
That he didn't contact. So I think it wasn't so much that they couldn't be contacted. I don't think he cared to contact them. So there's a chance that because they were saying that there's other missions out there, there are other humans out in space right now.
No, I get it. I'm with you.
So that fixes the Adam and Eve thing. All they have to do is figure out how to contact them and tell them, hey, we're set up on K-23. Come on over. It's wonderful over here. I don't know.
No, I'm with you. And even for my complaint that I kind of tap out on the whole hallucination of another character. Like, I'm not a big fan of that trope in any media, but they do it here. And it's still justified because, like you're saying, he is on pills, he is on whiskey, he is in the Arctic by himself. So the hallucinations do make sense. And the fact that it relates to his ultimate purpose of he really just cares about protecting the daughter that he never met rather than like saving humanity or, you know, fixing Earth. It makes a little bit more sense. Yeah. No,
it
I'm
makes more sense for the selfish character he was kind of built up to be, too. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
So anyway, it seems like we kind of lean towards liking this movie, Mikey. So pizza rating.
Pizza
over
rating.
To you. Our pizza ratings are out of an 8-slice pizza. We can add toppings. We can take away toppings. A full pizza, 8 out of 8 is the best because you got a whole pizza there. So, Mikey, how many slices do you give The Midnight Sky?
I think, like I said, this reminds me of movies like The Arrival or Sunshine or Interstellar, where it's more of a human story in the context of sci-fi rather than just like a sci-fi extravaganza. So if you know that going in, I think you'll have a better time, which is why I had a good time with it. So I'm thinking probably around plain cheese, but six. six slices, just because I love the cinematography. I love the spaceship design. I love that they don't explain everything to you and you get to think about it. That's all thumbs up in my favor. So plain cheese, maybe light cheese, no sauce, 6 slices.
6 out of 8 slices. That's that's a pretty good rating. I've given stuff 6 out of 8 and people got mad at me, but that's a good rating. It's above average. 4 out of 8's average. Okay, so I actually really enjoyed this movie. It actually made me upset that how much people don't like this movie. I liked it a lot.
Okay.
I didn't have any problems with any of the stuff. You saw how I explained it away. I'm like defending it as if I was on the crew of the movie or something. So it must mean I liked it. The biggest problem I had is I wanted that guy to be a cosmonaut. and the decision of those guys to go down there was weird to me. But that's not that big of a deal, really, because if I can put it into my head that because they're astronauts, they know about the other astronaut missions that are active at the time.
Yes.
So they're not sitting there going like, oh, we're the last chance for humanity, because they know they're not. So there you go. I just fixed that. So I'm giving this 7 out of 8 slices. It's probably plain cheese. I'm not topping it with tons of toppings, but I really like this movie. I'm giving it 7 out of 8 slices.
I'm with you. Hey, 7 out of 8 is great. Mine was going to be 5 out of 8, but your justification of the underwater scene, that was the only scene that took me out of it. So your justification of it boosted mine a little bit. So I'm glad we get to chat about it.
So we really like this movie. Hey, let us know if you're one of those people who is really disappointed, and let us know why. The thing that we hear at Assuming Positions, we aren't people who think you're bad for thinking something is bad that we thought was good.
You're wrong and dumb. No.
Yeah, we're not that way. But what we do want is we want conversation. We want you to tell us why you thought it wasn't good, or tell us why you thought it was good.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can let us know on our social medias. You can hit us up at Assuming Pod on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And if you want to write something longer, you can Gmail us, assumingpositions@gmail.com.
.com.
We want to thank you guys so much for listening. We want to thank That Guy Brad for doing our announcing, Not Scott Productions for equipment, Jazzar for our music, and we hope you guys have a interstellar week. That's a different movie, but hey.
We hope you have a George Clooney week where you accomplish your mission even though the entire Earth is dying. Wait, no, that's too heavy.
Good stuff.
Indeed. Book-based properties, there is a little bit more. Ugh, sorry, burps.